to the Cup and Saucy Book Club. I'm Jen.
And I'm Zanna.
What's in your cup today, Zanna?
I'm having a pumpkin pie chai from the Asheville Tea Company. It's a lovely black tea with lots of my favorite spices.
I'm having a British breakfast tea from Marks & Spencer, which is a department store, but they have a gourmet food and beverage section, and the teas from there are always lovely. But it's also kind of hitting the theme of today's episode and because it's very imperialist.
Okay. So, Jen, to spice things up a little bit, what did I give you to read?
Yes, listeners, you've heard that right. Episode, Zanna gave me something to read. And it's Black Cake by Charmaine Wilkerson.
And what did you think?
Well, I also edged Zanna and didn't tell her a thing about whether or not I liked this book.
Yep, you did.
I liked it, but I also didn't. It's one of those. It's one of those books where, like a few of the books that I gave you last year, it hit something that I didn't know. It talks about a lot of things that I didn't know that I had some anger issues about.
Okay. And that's fair, because this book goes a lot of places.
And so this is a multi-generational family saga about a family from a Caribbean island that is unnamed, but the...
It's pretty strongly hinted that it's Jamaica.
But it's not outright stated.
Right.
The opening of the book is a brother and sister who have been estranged for several years. Their mother dies and asks them to come to listen to a recording that her attorney has. And you find out all sorts of things about her, about the mother and their father, and about the life that she lived before they were even born.
Right.
Quite a journey. It's difficult to talk about this book without talking spoilers.
Without spoiling things. Yeah. That's true. I can see that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, and in fact, so I not only read this book and read this book and listened to the book, but I also just binged it on Hulu. They created a mini series out of this. And the mini series and the book are a little bit different. Some of the ways that the mini series handles some of the big reveals are not as kind of shocking, I guess, as they are in the book.
Yeah, I exclusively listened to this on audiobook, and the audiobook is performed by Lynette R. Freeman and Simone McIntyre. And Simone is the mother's role and has a very strong Caribbean accent. It definitely sounds Jamaican. And there's, you know, because there's a little bit of British, there's a little bit of patois, it's all sort of blended in there. And both narrators give wonderful performances. And this is a very well-written book. My main issue with it, though, was all the family secrets.
Well, which is interesting because that is entirely the theme.
It is.
I mean, so, yeah, the family secrets is really... And secrets are a massive part of this. And
yes.
Basically, there's no story without the secrets.
Yeah.
Still is a story. But, you know, the impact of the story is different if any of this was known ahead of time.
And everybody's got secrets.
Everybody.
Everybody in this book has secrets. The brother and sister that we mentioned, they each have secrets. Even the lawyer has secrets.
Right.
All of the characters that you meet expect them to have a secret.
Right.
Without revealing really what any of the secrets are. So the reason that this hit particularly for me is that my family, without going into too much detail on anything, has kept a lot of family secrets, both on my mother's side and my father's side. Some of these secrets have not been revealed until after the person who it's about has passed, or, you know, years later. For example, my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, was married for a short time to my mother's biological father. And okay. 4 years, my mother thought that he was, his name was one thing,
mm-hmm.
and that he was, you know, that they had just divorced and that that was it, and mm-hmm. that they lost contact. And, but she began to look into the genealogical records and do ancestry and all of that sort of stuff, and could not find anything on this guy based on the name. About 5 years before my grandmother passed, she had a stroke and was in the hospital, and we were visiting her. My mom was talking about something about this, about uh-huh. her biological father, and my grandmother, whose filters had been stripped away by the stroke, said, well, you know, that's not his name. No.
What?
No, we didn't know that, Gran. Tell us more. And she's like, oh, yeah, no, his name is this. And, you know, my mother, who is in her 50s at this point, is just like, excuse me? My whole life, I've thought that this guy was named one thing, and now he's named something else.
So, you know, like we were saying, the secrets are a huge part of this novel, and that's a huge secret that you're talking about with your yeah. with your family. So why do you think people do that? Why do people keep that kind of secret?
Well, okay, so for my family's secrets, and that's like mm-hmm. only one, you know, this brought up
sure
every family secret. Right. A lot of them, for my family at least, I think are generational. So, uh-huh. you know, you have, and some of the family secrets in Black Cake are also a generational thing.
I think
you
so
know,
too,
they're,
yeah.
they're not, you know, seen in a modern filter and in a modern light, they're not quite
like, why
scandalous.
Would anybody keep,
yeah, why
like,
would anybody
why would somebody
care?
Keep that? Yeah.
You know, why would anybody care? So, you know, I have, for example, one relative who they suspect had breast cancer, but at the time they didn't call it that. And so she right. spent time in a tuberculosis sanitarium, and it was a big family secret for a long time. Well, now we would say she had breast cancer and it would be treated and,
right.
you know, from there. But it was a big scandal and a big family secret for a long time because of the generational difference.
Yeah.
And I think that that's one of them. Also, just, you know, if your secret is there's like a time and place for secrets, you know, you need mm-hmm. to you need to keep it, and for, you know, any personal secrets that you have, you need to keep it close to the vest until you can reveal it to the right person at the right time. But as often happens with these things, there's never a right time, or
there's never a right time, yeah,
or it's revealed before you're ready. You know, and in some cases, you might never be ready to reveal it, but it gets revealed
right.
anyway. That for me was a lot of my issues with this book. It was uh-huh. it was well done.
Yeah.
And I actually enjoyed the book in terms of that. But the characters, all of the characters
you,
when they're having these
crazy.
Secrets. Yeah, it was just like
you just wanted to shake the characters and like just talk to each other
and just and this is not a big deal.
It's like, why are you keeping this secret?
Yeah. So one of the secrets that I think that we can reveal without giving too much away is mm-hmm. that there is someone who has a lot of influence in on the island that they're on. And mm-hmm. Something happens to that person, but the family still has a lot of influence. And mm-hmm. and so it follows some of the characters, you know, across the world. And
yeah, and across time.
And across time. Mm-hmm. And really, would it? I mean, you know, it's one guy on one island. It's one family.
Yeah. Well, and that I think that what's interesting. So I think maybe giving too much away, but this character dies. And
yes.
So this character dies, and there's suspicion throughout the book about how this guy
how the
died.
Character died. Yeah.
The part of the reason it sticks with some people is because there's this kind of enormous feeling of responsibility.
Yeah.
And even if they were not the cause or the direct cause of this guy's death, there is still like a weight being, you know, so it, while this one guy on this one island 50 years ago may not matter to like anybody else,
right?
But the people who were most closely touched by it still hold it in there as, because they have never shared it with anybody.
Yeah.
They hold it as kind of a mark of I can't ever share this. And, you know, they make this vow that they can never share this. And then it becomes this gigantic weight that they carry along with them throughout their lives, even though they do many other things in their lives and they have many other experiences many other secrets. Yeah. But they still, that's something that still impacts them regularly, because it means to them that they can't ever go back to that old life.
Right.
And it is a turning point that cuts them off from their old life.
All of the family secrets were the thing that had the biggest impact on me because of, you know, my own family's secrets. So it has come to the point where I tell my child everything. Like there are no family secrets.
Right.
You know, I mean, beyond what they're getting for their birthday or Christmas or something, there really are.
No, honestly, my kid has access to my Amazon account, so there's no secrets there either.
But, you know, I've told the stories of what were family secrets that I knew. Mm-hmm. And everything gets discussed.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things where I say, well, you know, that one is, these people are still around and it's not my story to tell. But, you know, which is different.
That is different. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, in terms of Black Cake though, we're talking about people who are all long dead or assumed dead or, you know, otherwise.
Or well out of each other's
sphere.
Lives.
Yeah. But another thing so that was the part that affected me personally.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another aspect of this, which is a big part of this, but it is out of my lived experience, is the fact that these are mostly, well, it's all people of color, but it's mostly Black, but not all.
Right.
You know, one of the characters is Chinese and then has children. And, you know, so you've got multiracial families but the institutional racism, the just passive racism affects everything in their lives.
Yep.
And
yep.
this is not part of my lived experience, but the way that it's presented is just, you know, like the brother, for example, you know, talks about a moment when he had taken the mother to the attorney's office to record this message that she gives to her kids. And he didn't know that that's what she was doing at the time. But she goes up to the attorney's office while he's sitting in the car and waiting for her.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this moment where there's a patrol car that comes up and knocks on, and the police officer knocks on the window. And so his first immediate thought is that he's a Black man. He's going to be pulled over for something. You know, he is sitting in a parked car in the driver's seat.
Right.
And so his immediate thought is that.
And there's even this thought of that you can't, like, he can't have the nice car that he could afford because he's got a high position and
he's a well-to-do.
But he can't have those nice things because, you know, it's assumed that he has taken it somehow.
Stole them. Well, and it turns out that the reason that the officer knocked on his window was not particularly because he was a person of color, but because he was a single man alone sitting in a car near a school. It was a school or a park. And you know, he could have been just watching those kids. And so any man of any color would have been seen as suspicious in that case. And so he had to think about that and go, you know what? If I had been a white man, they would have still knocked on my window. It had nothing to do with my being black or not.
But his
automatic, the fact that he has to automatically assume that the reason that a cop stops him for something is because of his color first. And that is one of the things about institutional racism. It's just like,
right.
It's ingrained in it. And it permeates throughout everything. And so it has to be, while it's not my lived experience, you know, that doesn't mean that I don't need to have awareness of it.
Right.
That goes throughout the book. There's things that happen that may not necessarily happen to a character with white skin. You know, that was a big part of it, but it was never, I never felt like I was being, you know, it was very subtle. It was never like, yeah, so here's a problem and this is racism.
Right. It was not a lecture.
Yeah, it was
right.
not it was yeah. not a lecture. It was not
it was,
done in that
It was basically to me it was like a subtle study of microaggressions.
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
So where you kind of, you know, where the characters almost don't notice it anymore.
Yeah.
But
it's just such
like,
a part of their everyday
you know,
lives.
You're not allowed to have, you know, if you're a black man, you're not allowed to have any kind of anger.
Yeah.
You know, and because that's seen as threatening to everybody else. And that's just, I mean, it's absurd to think that human beings can't feel the full spectrum of emotions, that you're going to police emotions so much that they can't actually have, you know, that a person can't actually have the emotions that they're having because it's too frightening to other people. And
I don't think that we can say that this... Oh, you know, well, this book is a great example of representation and you know, people of color and of the queer community, because there are queer characters in there as well. It's just, it's life, you know,
that's
kind of
how I felt
know.
Too. Yeah. I didn't think about it as being a, you know, a black book or, you know, a book that's only for people of color. You know, I felt like to me it was just a good story. The secrets and the generational issues and so on. I actually had the opposite kind of reaction to it not really opposite. It made me angry.
Yeah.
But it made me angry in a way that I was like, well, this is really well done. And, you know, I don't want to, my life doesn't need to be this way. My family doesn't need to be this way. And my family is not quite as much in the secret, but I mean, it's there. Of course, there's the generational stuff.
Yeah.
But what do you think is more complicated? The secrets that people keep or the secrets that people share?
Well, with this book in particular, that's a tough question, actually.
Right. Like some of the secrets in this book, I mean, what would be they do come out in the end, but what kind of complications would this had run into?
Because we keep centered on the brother and sister because they start out the book, although they're not always the central part of the story.
I would argue that they are not the protagonists of the story.
I would argue that it's the mother.
This is her story. Mm. And it is a little bit of a love story. It is a romance.
It goes past
the expiration date.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's past the happily ever after because they're
right.
Really.
Well, they
isn't...
do get a happy.
They do get a happily ever after. They do.
But we get to the end of it. Yeah. They, like I said, it goes past the expiration date.
Yeah. It can be said it's past death till death do us part. You know, instead of the happily ever after. But even though the brother and sister are not central parts of the book, they're kind of the return point, you know, like in a game of tag where you have this tree is this, you know, safe. It's like they keep returning to that, and then
they do. But they're also the audience eyes,
right? Right.
So they're the view into the story for the rest of the audience. So they are, while they're not the protagonist, they are the everyman.
Yes.
You know, they're the people who are how you get into this story, how you connect to the story.
Yeah, and meanwhile, they have their own stories and secrets too.
They do.
And those come out throughout the book. But
but
getting back to your question, I think that for the brother and sister, the secrets that they learn later have a bigger impact than the ones that they were already keeping.
So their mother's secrets that they learned impacting them more than their own personal secrets.
I would argue yes, because of what has to happen now that they have this information.
Right.
And for the mother, I think it's the secrets that she had to keep.
Mm-hmm.
We open the book after she's dead, so it's not, you know, really,
so there's no
what
spoiler
happens
there.
Yeah, so there's, you know, she already knows, you know, the story, at least, you know, she knows the history. She doesn't know what happens after, but she is the catalyst by which it happens.
She knows her whole story, but she's gradually revealing it to the people who she's closest to, and there's a lot of shockers.
Yeah.
In there for her. What, without trying to spoil too much, what was the most surprising of the secrets to you?
That's a tough one, actually, because it's there were more than one where I was like, wait, what? That I actually like, you know, hit the back button a few times and went, okay, wait, did I hear that right?
Right.
I think the Pearl and Bunny were the most surprising to me.
Okay.
Particularly what happens with Pearl and Bunny, what's revealed at towards the end.
Right, right.
And
so Pearl and Bunny are friends of the mother's from,
So
from childhood.
Yeah, and that's revealed fairly early on, so.
And to me, what was interesting to me was that they didn't really reveal who most of these people were until later. It was
until
that
later.
even so, it was sort of like this mix of random stories that, you know, you had to assume were connected in some way, but you weren't entirely
because
sure
how why
they
tell
were connected.
The story otherwise,
right? Yeah. So you're gonna have to have some, but I do know that Charmaine Wilkerson, basically, I read some stuff about this book and how it got started, and she had a bunch of like little stories that were all kind of not fully connected, but kind of connected, and she was looking to kind of pull them all together, and that's where the Black Cake came in.
Yes.
And they used the Black Cake, this Caribbean Black Cake, as kind of the touchstone.
Yeah, this is the common thread. And Caribbean Black Cake is basically a fruit cake that is, the fruits are soaked in rum for, you know, and
months.
Like everybody has their own family recipe, and part of what makes each family recipe different is how long you soak the fruit. And then it's because it's soaked in rum, it takes on that dark color, and it's generally served at weddings. And so it's considered
weddings, anniversaries, Christmas, other
special celebration cake. Yeah.
But it seems to me within this book, the cake marks significant pivot points of change.
Yeah, it is very much symbolic of,
right,
you know, when the Black Cake appears, I mean, something's about to change, or something is about to be revealed. And it's not such overt symbolism as, you know, it's not like you have to dissect it like, you know, Stephen Crane's The Red Badge of Courage, and every color means something. And this is not something that high school English teachers are going to, you know, suck all the enjoyment out of a book when just talking about the symbolism. But no, I have no issues with this, of course.
Yeah, clearly not.
Yeah, clearly not. You know, But yeah, so, but the cake does come in to at significant points in the story.
Yep.
And it is, but it's not so much a symbol of anything as much as the common thread that binds all of these stories together.
The parts yeah. of the stories. Yeah.
Yeah. Because so, it takes on lots of meanings. I mean, it doesn't mean just one thing.
So do you have a traditional family recipe?
Yes, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. So
and what does it mean to you?
It's just a reminder, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, my great great grandmother's banana bread.
Okay.
It's just a quick bread recipe, but mm-hmm. within the family, it's been passed down in a couple of generations as banana bread, but it's been whatever fruit is available. And not always okay. fruit. So sometimes it was zucchini, sometimes it was, you know, whatever mm-hmm. squash was available. And
right.
so the recipe has changed over the generations.
Okay.
But it always starts with this base quick bread. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, whatever you have handy, it's now it's that kind of bread.
Some you know? Fruit.
It's some fruit bread.
Gotcha.
That sort of family recipe changes over time.
Right.
It's sort of supposed to, you know.
Yeah.
That everybody adds
kind
their,
of adds their own, yeah. you know, their own flair to it, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. Family recipes, you know, I was given, my mother-in-law gave me a recipe book, contained all of her family's recipes and favorites mm-hmm. for, you know, that my husband enjoyed as a kid and all of right. that sort of thing. So that's the rest of my cookbooks and things have their own shelf
mm-hmm.
that's outside the kitchen. That is the only one that actually lives in the kitchen because it's okay. the one that I regularly consult. And so,
right.
and like all cookbooks should be, that are used, mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's got stains all over it and the pages are crinkled
absolutely.
because they've been, absolutely. You know, splashed.
Well-loved.
Well-loved and well-used. Yeah. And if you can do it by memory, that's when you mm-hmm. know, that's when you know it's like the real deal.
Right. Right.
Which, you know, there's only maybe a handful of recipes that I can do by memory.
Yeah. In the book, they give sort of a recipe for this, but they're basically,
I was wondering
it's like
that,
nothing's.
Actually.
Yeah. So in the actual eyeball reading book, there's a recipe, but it basically says, you know, these are approximate and, you know,
yeah.
Eleanor never wrote anything down.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And
so you
and
just have to kind of feel you it, just, you know?
Yeah. This looks right, you know, and a pinch right. more of that and a dash more of that. And
yeah, at first I would say that the first one that came to mind was actually this Norwegian Christmas cookie recipe. But I have not deviated from that since my great grandmother's, you know.
Yeah.
You know, this was one that was passed down from my grandmother to me through my mom. And it had been my grandmother's mother's before that. But I don't think there's been any real deviation. In fact, we still have the same tins, some of the same tins. And so, so Sunbuckles are a Norwegian Christmas cookie that has cardamom. I've talked about that.
Of course.
And it's really labor intensive because you know, you make the dough and then it has to sit, but then you have to thinly press the dough into these little metal tins.
Oh my goodness.
And it's just, it takes hours to make just a sheet yeah. of these cookies. And then good luck that they don't break when
yeah.
they're coming out. Yeah. They're so delicate and light, you know, but, and they're a little dry. And most people who try them that aren't, you know, my family are like, can you add something to it? You know, and I'm like, no,
it's gotta be this.
It's gotta be this sort of dry biscuit kind of thing. But I think the one that is more like what you're talking about with the evolution of the recipe as people add to it is the my grandmama's on my dad's side chicken bog recipe. And chicken bog is chicken and rice basically that's baked in the oven.
Oh, okay.
And you can add sausage to it, you can add vegetable, you can do whatever you want to it. And the basic recipe is basically just chicken and rice and like three times as much water as you would normally cook with rice, and it bakes in the oven for a long time. Well, my cousin has perfected this in a, you know, in her own way by changing the rice to Minnesota wild rice and chicken, and there's broccoli and there's all sorts of wonderful herbs and things in it, and it was like, it's so far from our grandmama's recipe, but it's still just, it's evocative of it while still being her own thing, and
yeah,
and just delicious.
And it's and it's taken a nice evolution. Yeah, a lot of
my
grandparents' recipes, interestingly enough, because they were Depression era folks, so a lot of them are, you know, a can of this and can of whatever. There's a roast that my grandfather made that half of the ingredients are condensed soups.
Oh yeah. So. No, I have some of those. I have some of those too.
Yeah.
From my,
I mean, they're absolutely delicious, you know, but
sure.
But the
healthy,
not so much.
I mean,
and then there's
cream of soup is basically the staple for all, you know, North Midwestern recipes.
Yeah.
So this cream of actually chicken, cream of mushroom, cream of corn, cream of whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's all over my recipe book from my grandma.
Yeah. And it's got an Italian name on it, even though it's very much an American thing, because it's called Stracotta Danone, which is grandfather's roast.
Okay.
But it's got, let's see, French onion condensed soup, golden mushroom, like a basic tomato soup, you know, but they're all like condensed. The amount of salt in this thing, I'd never want to know, because that it's a heart attack inducing level of sodium.
Right.
But it makes an absolutely delicious gravy and base for, you know, what is the cheapest cut of meat. And then another recipe that I still make to this day is Depression cake, and which is a Depression era, it's also called wacky cake.
Okay.
But it doesn't use any dairy, and so it makes a nice, it's, you know, the cake that you can make with just ingredients from your pantry, and you don't even have to do. Now, this is something that I added to it, is that I don't do a frosting to it. I just add Nutella on the top.
Okay.
And Nutella is a nice just frosting on its own. And
chocolate,
it's also
lard.
Yeah. And it's also shelf stable. So, you know, everything on here is like shelf stable, and then you add water.
So one of the other, there's a quote in the book that I'm going to read, and we'll talk about this, is the thing about identity. There's your family history. There's how you see yourself, and then there's what others see in you. How would you interpret this quote? And how do you see the character, some of the characters, and how this reflects?
Yeah, I'm going to take the sister for this one.
Okay. Benny.
Benny. Benedetta is, Benedetta.
Her full name is Benedetta, but she goes by Benny.
But she goes by Benny. And Benny is estranged from the family at the very beginning of the book.
Yep.
She was thought to not come home for her father's funeral. She and her father had a falling out like 5 or so years before. And so, but her secrets and what people think of her has a lot to do with what she thinks of herself. So I think that she, to my mind anyway, best embodies this idea, is, you know, the multi facets of, you know, how other people see you, how you see yourself, and how you see other people's perception of you, you know, because that's another filter too.
Right.
And so everyone automatically makes
people think about you.
Yeah. What you think people think about you is an assumption that everyone makes.
Right.
You know, whether or not it's,
of course,
true.
The reality is that most people don't think about you. They're too busy thinking about themselves. But
and all humans are selfish at their core.
Yep.
But what that means is It's not that they can't be altruistic about something.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
But it means that everything comes through a perspective of self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the words that they speak, the actions that they take, all come through their self-perception and their self-awareness and fulfilling their needs. You know, mm-hmm. their wants and desires are all filtered through this idea of self first. And then in the mm-hmm. actions that they take, if they have benefit or harm to someone else, well, that's another level, but it's now left the person
mm-hmm.
to go out into the world and to have an impact. And
right.
and I think that for this book in particular, that perception of self, how you perceive that others perceive you,
mm-hmm.
it flavors every character in this book.
Yep. Yep. And it's actually, I would say that it's one of the instigators of all of the secrets.
Yes.
So
I would agree with that.
Part of the reason that they keep so many secrets is because of their perception of what people will think of them.
I would say yes, that's definitely true. It makes for a rich, layered, I mean, this book is extremely well written. My mm-hmm. my perceptions of it, though,
right,
is what colors my rating of it.
Okay, so using our 5-cup rating system, what would you give Black Cake by Charmaine Wilkerson?
I would give it a 4.
Okay.
And it's because of my perceptions of the family secrets,
mm-hmm.
the fact that this is not necessarily a book I would have picked up myself if I hadn't been recommended it.
Mm-hmm.
It does remind me of another book that we may or may not explore on this, is that, you know, about a multi-generational family secrets,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't start out that way.
Okay.
In the terms of our spicy rating, or our saucy rating.
Right.
It's one.
It's not saucy.
It's not saucy. You know, there is romance, definitely.
Right.
But there is, it's all on the very lightest level. You know, I met this person, I fell in love. That's
right.
It.
There are some trigger warnings.
Yes, there are trigger warnings because there is mentions of abuse. There's mentions mm-hmm. of non-consensual
sexual assault
and yeah. sexual mm-hmm. assault. Yeah, and some of it happens to children.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot to unpack with this, but when you're mm-hmm. talking about generations, there's going to be, when you're talking about generations as far back as this is going, there are going mm-hmm. to be things that would be triggering to a modern audience, for sure.
Well, I recommended it because I loved it. So I'm giving the book 5. I give and the audiobook, I don't know, 6 if you can do it, just because I really enjoyed the performances.
The performances were 5 for me.
Yeah.
They were wonderful.
Yeah. But then I'm also going to give the Hulu miniseries, I'm going to give it 4. It was enjoyable, but it missed a lot of the important things. And there's certain revelations that happen too soon in the miniseries that I understand why they did it. I understand that they did it because it wouldn't make sense.
Right.
For the audience, because I was confused at the beginning about what was going on, about, you know, who was who. And
you did read the book first.
I read the book first.
Yeah.
And so it was a little, you know, it took me a little bit to kind of, and when I sort of found out who people actually were, I was like, oh, okay, that makes a whole lot more sense now. And I didn't get that with the show, even though I'd already read the book. So, I wouldn't have gotten that anyway, but it was definitely given, like, my husband watched it with me, and, you know, he really enjoyed it too. And, he was not as floored by some things because it came out earlier.
Yeah. And sometimes that happens, and it's why the book is always better.
Why the book is better. Yeah.
And sometimes the audiobook is even better because of that.
The performances can elevate the the narrative for sure.
And in this case, the performances definitely did, because the audiobook performances in this case, you know, there's always that when you go back and forth in time, there's always that sort of Wayne's World doo-doo-doo-doo, you know, kind of thing that can take you out of a book. But the way that the performances were done is that, you know, when the mother is speaking, it's like, you know, you're going back to some point in time that is not present day. The way she speaks and the way that she tells a story, it just takes you right there with no like, oh, wait, where am I? Am I traveling? What am I doing? You know, there's none of that. It's so seamless. And it's one of the things that really elevated the audio performance that I know I didn't eyeball read this, but I know that if I had, it would have been much more jarring, you know, without this. And it's one of the things that I love most about audiobooks is that it can, while not taking any a single word away from the story, because they're telling the complete, you know, the complete book, but it changes it enough that it actually helps you stay in the story instead of distracting from it.
I agree.
It was interesting to do it this way.
not fully for you, I get, but
but definitely, you know, I also know that I give you books that aren't fully for you either.
That's true.
It's what makes it's what makes this work.
We have a lot of similarities, and we apparently sound alike, but we don't have exactly the same taste, but I think that we add.
Yes. And I'm glad that I read it. It's not, you know, I didn't throw the book away. I mean, I got mad at it several times.
Sure.
But I think that
I get mad at books all the time.
Yeah. But I think that adds to the experience too, because, you know, if you
but
don't
it made you feel something.
Yeah. If you don't have some sort of visceral reaction to a book, then, you know, that story is not for you. And just stop right there, because I'm not afraid of DNFing a book if I'm not feeling anything about it. So it's a story for someone else. It's just not for you.
At the beginning of the month, we gave you, the listeners, a chance to choose Zanna's next book to review. The choices were between He's Not My Type by Megan Quinn and Between Never and Forever by Britt Benson. Tune in next week to find out which book you chose for Zanna to read. Also, at the beginning of the month, we announced that the last episode of the month would be our interview with Lucy Rivers. We had some technical issues with the recording, and we will have Lucy on the show at a later date. For more information on all the books that we read and the guests that we interview, please visit our website, cupandsaucybooks.com, for links and show notes.
You can also follow us on social media at Cup and Saucy Books. We are on Threads, Instagram, and TikTok. Let us know if you have a book you would like us to review on the show. If you like what you hear, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review.
Thank you for joining us for the Cup and Saucy Book Club. Join us next time for more great conversations with people from the world of books.
And probably a few tangents.
Happy reading.
Cheers.